You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
We know it's probably bad for us, but we just can't stop doing it. I'm not talking about drugs or your diet, but air conditioning. Author Stan Cox explains how refrigerated rooms and offices have transformed America and the world at a very high price for our planet and our culture. His new book is Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Air-Conditioned Worlds, and Finding New Ways to Get Through Summer. I'm Alex Smith, your host, Stan Cox. Welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Good to be with you.
Stan, your previous book was Sick Planet, Corporate Food and Medicine. What caused you to move on to your investigation of air conditioning?
Well, I was struck by when I looked into it, the amount of resources that go into air conditioning, the greenhouse emissions and other problems that are generated. And when we think about the other big energy guzzlers in our society, the automobile, jet aircraft, television, computer, we've had a lot of debate about the pros and cons of those. They've been widely discussed, but all the time air conditioning has kind of been humming away in the background, and I believe has had just as profound an effect on our society.
I was surprised how deep and rich this book is. I read it all, because you don't stop with the technology, but you get into a lot of underlying social assumptions. For example, most of us were raised with the idea that hot weather makes people move slower, and that's why the U.S. Northeast leapt ahead into industrialization, while the South and at least most southern developing nations lagged behind. Talk to us about that, would you?
Yeah, there was a long tradition in the first half of the 20th century of researchers purporting to demonstrate that the warmer the weather, the lower the level of economic growth, the less productivity, etc. And there was a good statistical evidence for that, but of course, when you're comparing, say, between different countries, a lot of tropical countries have a history of imperialism, colonialism, etc. There are a lot of other reasons that some countries are rich and others poor. But there were analysts still as late as the 1940s saying that the main reason the South had not, southern United States had not developed was because of the high annual average temperature. And sure enough, in the age of air conditioning, the past 50 years, 70% of our economic growth has been in the South. Coincidence or not, that change occurred as air conditioning was taking off. I don't think it's necessarily an effect of people feeling more comfortable and therefore producing more, but it made it possible for a lot of industries to move to the South. We wouldn't have the world's largest and seventh largest airports in Atlanta and Dallas if it weren't for that. The Research Triangle of North Carolina without air conditioning wouldn't be a hub for pharmaceuticals, computing, etc.
Until very lately, the American South has been growing not just in jobs but in population. As you describe very well in your book, if we had to turn off the air conditioners, I wonder, there could be a giant exodus and migration back north, and that could happen if dwindling fossil fuels become too expensive or climate change just overwhelms our power supplies, leading to blackouts. Do you find in your study what happens when refrigerated people have the machine shut down for some reason? Does crime go up? Could society become more unstable?
Well, that's a good question. I start the book out in Phoenix, which is probably the city more than any other in this country or maybe the world created by air conditioning. There would not be 5 million people living in the area in that valley if it weren't for air conditioning. And it certainly, if there were some through some series of events, there were no air conditioning available, people would, that migration that's been going on for 50 years into the Phoenix area would stop. But there are other forces that will do the same thing. As I talk about, the air conditioning has made it possible for many more people to move into that area and some other areas of the country than there is water available to support them. So it's been predicted for a long time that eventually Phoenix is going to not have sufficient water. On the other hand, the 50-year exodus into Phoenix and into South Florida, which I also go into in some detail, about a year and a half ago, suddenly stopped. Of course, the reason was the big economic decline, and people just generally stopped relocating. But there are even signs now that that migration is reversed, that people are deciding with or without air conditioning that those are not necessarily the best places to live and are leaving.
You know, I guess air conditioning is stalling public awareness of global warming, and many of us think, well, if it gets too hot, I'll just add more air conditioning. What's the matter with that logic?
Well, I kind of see that as the central irony of this whole issue and sort of the mascot for the book, I guess, the fact that as we continue to put out increased amounts of greenhouse emissions, and we see hotter summers, and we know now that this very hot summer of 2010 was the culmination of the hottest decade ever recorded. If that trend continues, and our response is we can deal with it with air conditioning, what we're doing, of course, is helping to ensure that there will be even hotter summers, more frequent and intense heat waves in the future, and we'll need even more air conditioning. Right now, the greenhouse emissions from air conditioning buildings and vehicles in this country amounts to almost 500 million tons of carbon dioxide equivalent each year, which makes it if that were a country, it would be one of the major carbon emitters in the world. So it's a cycle that I see as needing to be broken.
I'd like to focus for a minute on car air conditioning. Is that just an American fixation?
Well, it got its start in America, of course, and we very rapidly have adopted it, and it's pretty much universal now. You're hardly going to find a new car for sale in America that doesn't have it. But in recent years, it's really taken over in other parts of the world, whereas a decade ago, very few European cars were equipped with air conditioning as standard equipment. Within a few years, they're saying that 95% of European cars will have air. And that has already, the increase in use of mobile air conditioning in Europe, both through increased fuel consumption and through leakage of refrigerants, has been fingered as the primary culprit in the European Union's failure to fulfill its Kyoto Protocol goals for reducing emissions.
I have lived in the American South, and I did manage to do so without car air conditioning, but I can certainly understand why people have it. So what can people do, if they must have it, to reduce the impact of car air conditioning?
Well, I guess we have to look at the vehicle air conditioning in particular as more of a systemic problem, because you're right, I've also lived in the South and in very hot climates, and because of the way we've built our cities and because of our dependence on the automobile, it would be very difficult for people to get to work and back, especially in cities like Atlanta, L.A., or Miami that have often very long commutes without air conditioning. So air conditioning obviously adds to fuel consumption, but the best way to cut our overall emissions from driving is, of course, to drive as little as possible to carpool or whatever is required to simply not be driving as much, and you know that's not very feasible for a lot of people. So the long-term goal needs to be a complete overhaul of our transportation system, more convenient, affordable mass transit, more relocation of homes and businesses, so there you can have more pedestrian, bicycle, etc. Traffic. So air conditioning adds to a problem that is already so huge that we need to figure out a different way to do things.
This is Radio EcoShock. We are talking about Losing Our Cool, a new book on air conditioning and its alternatives from author Stan Cox. Stan, I looked into the gigantic costs of cooling office towers, all those buildings where floor-to-ceiling windows can never be opened, even when it's nice outside. In Toronto, Canada, the AC costs were so high, a series of downtown towers tried an expensive scheme to pump cold water from Lake Ontario around. Tell us about the problems of commercial air conditioning and whether you think some buildings may have to be abandoned simply because they're so inefficient.
Well, in the age of air conditioning, of course, buildings have been built in a very different way. The cross-ventilated designs that might have been in an E or an H shape in the past, you don't see that anymore. You don't see a case where everyone in an office is close enough to a window to get some ventilation. And as you say, often the windows don't even open. Once we commit to air conditioning like that, then it's a matter of trying to make the building as tight, energy efficient as possible, not only in the winter but all year round. That has been shown to result in increased incidence of sick building syndrome, that is, the buildup of air pollutants that causes a number of health problems for people. There have been studies in the U.S., Brazil, Europe, other places, all showing that people who work in air-conditioned buildings go to the doctor in the hospital more and have more frequent health problems than people who don't live with, don't work in an air-conditioned environment. So you're right that the deep space within big office blocks could become uninhabitable without air conditioning, but in the meantime, it'll take a long time to revamp our infrastructure, but in the meantime, there are things that can be done. The most common comment that I've heard since this book came out, and the most common complaint of office employees in surveys, is that it's too cold in their office in the summer, and they'll often say, I have to take a sweater or a space heater to work. That's obviously something that could be addressed right away, is the excessive use of air conditioning. While we try to encourage the green building movement, natural cooling, passive cooling movement for buildings of the future.
Is there a link between AC and consumer spending in malls?
Well, we do know that in a very brief period from 1995 to 2003, the amount of air conditioning used for cooling malls, both enclosed and strip malls in the U.S., increased by 77%. That's not just that more malls were being built, because the amount of cooling per square foot in malls increased 34% just in those 8 years. Now, that ran up to just before the big bust, and so a lot of retail space has gone vacant right now, so we've probably seen some reduction. But there is the general, and has been since air conditioning was invented, the general feeling that cooling off customers tends to stimulate them to buy more. There was a kind of a funny article in the New York Times in around 2005 in which the reporter took a thermometer into various stores in Manhattan, and the more upscale the store, the cooler the environment, and it got down in the most high-class stores, it was down to 68 degrees Fahrenheit. And the reporter, when they asked the managers there, they said, oh, yes, absolutely, it's part of the upscale image is to have the space very cool. During the recent, I was on a couple of radio programs in New York during the heat wave in early July, and there were a lot of complaints about retail outlets in Manhattan running the air conditioning full blast with the doors open to try to attract people inside.
Well, the more we cool the inside, the more the outside heats up. I can envision a dystopia where humans can't live outside without mechanically cooled body suits. Stan Cox, we need to talk about how to get off this spiral, the other options for living comfortably. What are some of the strategies you cover in your book, Losing Our Cool?
Well, one thing I try to address is this question of efficiency. Should you go out and buy a more efficient air conditioner? And that efficiency alone is not going to be the answer. We in a recent 12-year period, in which the efficiency of home air conditioning equipment in this country improved by 28%. During that same time, the amount of energy used to cool the average air-conditioned home went up 37%. So people were obviously taking advantage of that greater cooling power per dollar that they were getting. So looking to improve your efficiency by 20-25% with new equipment, there are ways to look for in which you could cut the consumption of air conditioning electricity in the home much more than that, simply by not using it as much. There's a tendency just to keep the air conditioning running in say here in the Midwest or in the South from April to October, right through a lot of periods that are not life-threatening heat waves. They're just normal hot summer weather, and a time when you can be indoors out of the sun with a fan going and with a breeze perhaps coming through the window. The indoors will often be 10 degrees below the outdoor, the maximum temperature outdoors for that day, and it's not bad at all. People also, of course, who have basements, when it really does get hot, the basement is a good place to go. There are a lot of more futuristic, or some of them borrow from very old technology, things like cooling towers that I discuss in the book. There's solar, purely solar air conditioning that uses the heat of the sun to produce chilled water. A number of other techniques, ground source cooling, in which the refrigerant is pumped deep into the earth to release the heat out of the house or office. Those technologies will also help us to reduce energy consumption from air conditioning. But overall, we're, I think, going to be healthier and happier if we just simply don't use it as much.
As we wrap up, is there something we missed or a final message you would like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I think one thing that we have to focus on is the thing to adjust isn't necessarily the thermostat. It may be adjustment of our own expectations of comfort. There is, among comfort researchers, what has come to be known as adaptive model of comfort, which says the range of temperatures that you find to be comfortable isn't necessarily a fixed range, this many degrees to this many, but it moves, it changes depending on the kinds of temperatures you've been exposed to in recent days and weeks and how much you've acclimatized. Medical research has shown as well that the body is very good at acclimatizing to heat, but of course, to do that, we can't be living in a tightly controlled cool temperature all the time. It does reduce our heat tolerance. So I think that's the message I'd like to leave people with, is think about how we can adjust ourselves perhaps to a warmer world of the future, and maybe use our own resilience and not rely so much on expensive and often fragile technology.
Well, thank you so much. We have been talking with Stan Cox. He's the author of Losing Our Cool, Uncomfortable Truths About Our Air-Conditioned World, and Finding New Ways to Get Through Summer. You can find out more at his website, losingourcool.com, and download a free MP3 copy of this Radio EcoShock interview from the Climate Change page of our Audio On Demand menu. That's at ecoshock.org. I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.